I had mine in my car.
One was the application, the other was a supplement that they filed the final applications and stuff.
You had them? Esther brought them.
I don't know.
Scott, you ready? All right, we're ready.
Wait, okay, so Esther must.
We had them at the hearing.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, I thought I had mine at the hearing, and I thought I left them in my car.
And Esther brought them.
They're taking care of you. All right. All right, good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culkin meeting for a work session today on case number PU 13-127, and today is September 17th. We're joined in the phone today by members of the company. Typically in a work session, we don't ask anything of the company, but you're certainly welcome to listen in, so thank you, gentlemen, for being there. I don't have any opening comments. Before I see if Commissioner Crispin does or Commissioner Fedorchak.
Only to say that I thought that the hearing was quite well run and center the other day. I thought the company was seemed well prepared, didn't spend unnecessary time going through things that, you know, probably were printed and needed to be on the record, but that no one there would be much interested in spending time listening to, but yet didn't just gloss things over either. So I appreciated the company's presentation.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak?
I would say I was also very pleased with the hearing and the way it was carried out, and thought it was really efficient and to the point, and great community involvement and support. So that's all.
Perfect. Thank you, Commissioners. All right, I guess the only comment I would have is that, just to tighten up the record a little bit, this case, we originally had a hearing set on that on the date. The paper did not get it announced properly, so that caused us to reschedule and have the hearing last Friday, which we scheduled a work session as quick as we could, understanding that there's already been delays built in here that we couldn't control, if you will. So Jerry sent out a draft order last night. So Jerry or Mitch, unless you have something different, I figured we'd just proceed through the order.
That's good. I got some changes from Julie that I wasn't able to see what you changed. So
okay.
So if you want to make them when we go.
Sure. They're small items.
And that file you sent me was kind of weird.
Came straight from my iPad.
It tells me if it opens, if I try to edit it, it could harm my computer.
Really?
You got to watch.
The Fedorchak virus.
I don't know.
Might have to get Steve to look into that and see what that's about. But for starters, I haven't talked to Mitch or anybody about this yet, but the caption on this case captions it as Mercer, Morton, or Oliver counties. And they didn't do anything in Mercer or Morton. Everything was in Oliver. And so I've been thinking we'd probably change that to just Oliver County.
Makes sense to me. I noted that in the text that there was, you know, references to other counties that weren't involved, and I didn't understand why they were still being included.
I agree.
So okay, I guess the preliminary statement is pretty straightforward.
There's a reference in the third paragraph there to Morton and Oliver counties on the last line of the third.
I missed that. 1, 2, 3.
Well, that one actually, when they originally applied, that's actually accurate. They originally applied, there were the possibility of facilities in Morton and Mercer.
Got it.
So it discusses on the next page how the hearing was rescheduled. And then we're into the findings of fact.
Hang on 1 second, Gerald, your chance to read through there. Page 2 we're finishing up, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just a question. When we're talking pages here, we're talking on this one that shows the edits, right?
I believe so, yes.
That's the one that I have. I think they're probably the same, though.
Okay, I'm good with page 2. Yeah.
Okay, findings of fact. I moved Minnesota Corporation in that first line because it made it sound like Minnesota Power was a Minnesota corporation. I don't think that's right. I think Elite's the corporation. And so I added that into the second line. Elite is a Minnesota corporation. And I didn't get a chance to check with David. Is that right, David?
Close enough, yeah. Okay. Minnesota Power is really the same as Elite for corporate purposes, but Minnesota Power is the utility, so I think the switch is a good switch. Okay. I think it captures it better than I did before on my draft.
All right, thanks, David. Then looking down through there, the next issue of any substance, since I saw, which I highlighted in yellow because I want to look into it, it says that the hub height or the rotor diameter is 113 meters or larger. I don't remember the or larger part, so I'm going to have to check into that. So I highlighted it.
Well, that's a good point because it goes back to the setbacks, obviously.
Yeah.
Can we, before we leave, is there anything else on that page?
I didn't have anything.
This is getting back to the thing about what counties it's in. Uh-huh. Up in number 3 near the top. North and northwest of New Salem, but it's northeast of Glen Allen, and I don't know, not really all that close, so could we just maybe leave N. Glen Allen out of it?
Okay.
Yeah, I was quite offended that there wasn't a reference to Hanover.
Oh, right.
Where is it from Hanover? We can put it in.
I think that's language from one of the different bison twin farms. I remember Tony talking about that. Yeah, Hanover would be a good addition.
There is a church there.
Okay.
So we're just going to remove N. Glen Allen?
Yeah, and change cities to city.
Okay. Good catch.
And so we're good on that page. Do you want a minute to...
Let's see here.
Mine didn't open with your changes on it, so that's why I'm peeking at yours.
It didn't? Oh, that's weird.
No, it's good by me.
Yep.
Next page, I had no changes at all.
Page 4, Jer?
Yeah.
Okay. Jer, I just had a question for you. I wanted to put in the order somewhere that any power not used by the company will be sold into the MISO market. You can get your thoughts if that's appropriate, and then where we would maybe put that. Because that was a question I asked, and they said, yes, of course. I think that shows that there is a benefit for North Dakota because it does get sold back into the MISO market.
I have to check if that's true. I did.
I asked that question to one of the witnesses.
Yeah. If it goes on the DC line and goes to Duluth, that's one thing. But I think sometimes if the DC line is full or something, that they might be dumping it somewhere locally.
Okay, well then let's just...
I'll check and...
Just check, and if it's something we can put in there, great. If it causes problems, we won't.
Okay.
Commissioner Cock, or Chair Cock, I mean, this is David Mueller. You could add a sentence on paragraph 11 where it says, on the existing AC system as available that flows throughout the MISO system. Because I guess I might have a concern about saying it, because I think we would always take title to it from a renewable energy compliance standpoint, even if we ended up selling it after we took title to it. And so, but the AC system is part of MISO, of course, or for the most part, is part of MISO, except for WAPA and Basin. So you could add something there, though, but on the existing AC system as available that flows throughout MISO.
I would recommend just leaving it out.
Yeah. Thank you, David. We'll typically not have the company's comments in a work session. I think we'll just leave it out, and I'll let Jerry and you guys talk offline, okay?
Sorry about that.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, let's just do that, Jerry. Leave it out. Follow the advice of the attorney, right, Mitch? Okay, so I didn't have any other comments on four.
And as you can see, they did a pretty good order here. I didn't have any changes on five either.
Let's see. One thing I noted, in a lot of the orders we do, we specifically say that this, no avoidance areas were affected or no exclusion areas were affected. I know we've got some avoidance areas in the farmland, prime farmland, but can we specifically state this project affects no exclusion areas? I think the most we say here is
we deal with the prime farmland. That's the only thing that I know of that is a reference to exclusion areas.
Yeah, I was just looking for a statement that's, we say here in number 18, with the exception of prime, we kind of outline what the siting criteria say, but I'm looking for a line that kind of summarizes how this project meets that. Maybe I missed it. Oh, here, number 21. It says, all we say is Minnesota Power submitted evidence to demonstrate that the proposed energy conversion facility will not have significant impact on the selection criteria set forth. I guess I would prefer a stronger statement saying that we, no exclusion areas are affected.
Okay.
That's a different
selection criteria. We have exclusion areas, avoidance areas, selection criteria, and policy criteria.
Oh, okay. So maybe that goes in a different spot then.
That's a different thing. But on the exclusion areas, I think we can put something like that in. With the exception of prime farmland, no exclusion areas.
Oh, I see.
Into 16 or 19.
I'm just trying to verify that. And for some reason, I can't find my table.
And then, do we have avoidance areas? Wetlands, maybe? Are they avoidance?
I didn't say that there were no avoidance areas in the project area, because the way our avoidance areas are defined now, new ones, is kind of funny with areas within 100 feet. I guess I could have said it. Areas within 100 feet of a house where the noise is more than 50 dBAs is an avoidance area.
But we don't have that here.
No, so I guess I could say that, except for the wetlands. I took out a paragraph later.
24, I see you took out to talk about avoidance areas.
Yeah. I took that out because we talked about wetlands in the following paragraph.
Well, you sort of get what I'm getting at, Jerry. Maybe you can take a look at it. I just like, when I'm looking through the order, sort of clear statement on how the exclusion and the avoidance areas are being handled, some sort of a summary statement.
What I'll do is add into 19 that no exclusion areas have been identified except for prime farmland.
You might want to take a look at the application there.
Did you find something that was?
Well, they've got, you know, they've got the cultural sites, which there's buffers around.
That
then
was my problem with saying something like that, is that, you know, we don't really know sometimes on cultural resource sites, or I don't, whether they're exclusion areas or avoidance areas.
Mm.
And the language in the rule isn't real clear. It's the rule. And it says designated are avoided, designated national are exclusion, but it uses that same kind of language again in an avoidance area. And so I've always refrained from making a blanket statement regarding those. In my own mind, I think I figured that an exclusion area is anything that makes it onto the National Register. But I don't think that we've ever had anything that totally said that and defined that. So it's been a weakness in it.
Well, the way it is, it's hard for me to ascertain exactly what the exclusion areas are and how they're being dealt with then, and what the avoidance areas are and how they're being dealt with. Can we kind of...
Basically, Commissioner, just... what we've always done, and you know, we can add to it if the commission would like. In their application, they basically affirm they're going to construct it as they say they're going to construct, and their application has what their mitigative measures are going to be, and our order requires them to follow those. So
mm-hmm.
we can spell that out again in the order if we want to.
We can reference it in that way, just, you know, the application, you know, mitigated measures. But my challenge is there's, you know, probably 10 or 11 or 15 different numbers on this. And as just, it's hard for me to ascertain in a summary, here's the avoidance areas. It seems like sometimes in orders, it's more clear. Like the avoidance areas are X and here's what we're doing. The exclusion areas are this and here's how we're handling them. So that's what I'm looking for here.
Purposely tried to not be real clear on what.
Well, I think what we, at least when Jerry and I go over these in the past, when there's ones that are problematic and they have to do something, I guess, special to avoid them, or somebody's wanting, you know, something different done for avoidance, when there's kind of conflicting testimony, we'll typically address those more specifically. You know, we could lay all of them out if that's what the commission wants, and say we accept the mitigative measures, which I think is what our orders say anyway, along with the certification that they'll build it in accordance with their application, including any mitigative measures that they've committed themselves to undertaking. We usually have an undertaking to outline all of those in our orders because, you know, sometimes they can be rather lengthy and probably a little bit incomplete if you try to summarize them based on, you know, hundreds of, you know.
Well, we do, though. I mean, we go through here and we kind of break them down.
We break it down, the ones that require special findings, like a negligible impact on prime farmland. The statute requires us to determine that. If any will be taken out.
I can say with the exception of prime farmland and possible cultural resource sites, no exclusion areas are present and have been identified within the project area.
That would be accurate.
Okay. I think that would be good.
Then I'll play devil's advocate on the, then you say impossible cultural resources sites, then they'll be looking for something from the SHPO saying, how have you further investigated those cultural sites?
Well, we have that in here.
We have the concurrence from SHPO on.
We have that in the following language that it's all been surveyed.
Yep.
SHPO's happy.
Okay. Fair enough.
And you don't say, though, that it's no adverse impact or whatever. You don't say that SHPO statement here. You just say a letter concurring with the conclusion.
Yep. Yeah, SHPO. We've got the...
Okay.
And we have some language that we
okay,
use
perfect.
There.
Okay, good.
And then I will put
set up to future discussions.
Say that one more time, Jerry.
I'll put 24 back in on the next page.
Sounds good.
And then we'll have exclusion and avoidance areas specifically identified.
Okay. Cool.
And I'll put possible cultural sites in front of wetlands.
Okay.
I might want to put woodlands in there, too.
Which one?
Well, that's what they have in there.
Woodlands? Okay.
They're present. There's just no impacts to them.
Are possible cultural sites, comma, woodlands, and wetlands. And
do you want to say that they're present but no impacts? I mean, woodlands and wetlands are present in the site, but the project will not impact them?
I was going to look at the bottom where it says to be a negligible impact to wetland resources and change wetland to these.
Sure.
Does that work?
I'll have to see it when you finish it. I'm not following exactly where that is, but I'm sure it'll be fine.
24, it would now read, the only avoidance areas identified within the project area are possible cultural sites, comma, woodlands, and wetlands. Minnesota Power testified that there will be negligible impact to these resources.
Why wouldn't we just say... They've got a.
Why would we say there's no impact? We're not going to. I think.
What about?
There could be some impact to some wetlands here and there.
Temporary.
Yeah.
The company has plans to mitigate, committed to mitigation efforts for any temporary impacts or something like that, because they're all mitigated, right?
Be avoided or mitigated?
Yeah. That language I like better.
I don't know. When you talk about the wetlands, there's places where they may have to temporarily trench through the wetlands. I don't know that would be mitigating the impact. I mean, they do what they have to do. They just have basically approval to do it. It's been determined that impact will be negligible from...
Bore?
Well, see, it goes with number 32.
Not in all wetlands. If there's no standing water and there's no impact from trenching, they don't always bore the collector lines.
And in 32, it says wetlands will be avoided to the extent practical during construction. We get into wetlands again down here.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you legal beagles pick the words, but I prefer mitigated versus negligible because negligible suggests that they're, you know, that's a subjective term to everybody, and mitigated seems more proactive, like something's being done about it. But whatever works, you know.
Up here and try to work it in.
Can we talk about 25 quick? Just, I think 25 needs to come out. I think that's next page. 25, I think, is a carryover from the previous application. I don't think it applies to this one. It should come out.
We went and looked at the maps again, and the maps show a couple of lignite reserves but they're outside the project area.
Right, so that verifies, then you don't need them in there if it's outside the project area. Yeah.
So, and I don't think we needed it in there anyway.
Yeah, okay.
That too.
So we were going to take that one out.
Is there usefulness, though, in just that someone that comes along reading this and wonders how we could have missed that?
Shows that it was looked at and not.
You know, similar to, you know, we've read in the papers recently, or online things about, you know, why don't these people consider underground stuff on the basin electric line? And, well, it was talked about. They just don't know it was talked about.
Right.
Well, maybe this would be useful to someone someday looking at this to see that we did consider it.
So if we wanted to leave it,
It
would basically just say no underground lignite coal reserves have been identified within the project area because they don't. There were originally, and then they moved the boundaries, and there aren't any on the present maps. And
no, that makes sense. Is if we just then if somebody's reading this down the road, they can say, well, at the time they did this, there was no known reserves under it. I see your point.
Yeah, that. Seems like an important factor that we just want to address it, that we thought of.
According to the North Dakota Geological Service, no known underground were located in the project area.
Yeah, I'm okay good with that.
I don't know that that's accurate necessarily either, because the...
I could say within or near.
That's not accurate.
Why are you saying it's not accurate? Because
I would have to double check. I'm trying to remember what the geological survey data was, or if we have that. I think, according to the North Dakota Geological Survey, there were two coal reserves. They just have the boundaries have been moved away from those. So it
didn't say there was none. It just said there were two. Is your point?
And then they move, and then they move the boundaries.
Yeah.
So to have those out.
Which number is this again?
25.
Well, we don't want something in there that's inaccurate, so I guess then it should come out.
Actually, on mine, 25 is the Bison Four will avoid all known archaeological sites.
That's the one above that.
Okay.
All right. Well, if the attorney doesn't think it can go in there, we better not put it in there.
What? I think we can. I just would just say
have to reword it.
No underground lignite coal reserves have been identified within the project area, and I'd just leave it at that.
Okay.
That's
accurate as best we know.
Yeah, because they moved it.
Yeah.
Then you're not referencing the geological survey letter.
Yeah.
Okay. That worked?
Yeah.
All right.
Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, whatever Mitch just said there.
Okay, and then this is the new 26. But we're putting 24 back in. So anyway, it'll be 27, second paragraph under cultural resources. We'll change that.
Okay.
To language we've used before. And I think up to page 7.
Did they talk about the eagle's nest somewhere in here?
Talk about what?
The eagle nest, that they found one and they're keeping away from it? Specifically, or is that addressed in the general nature?
I don't remember reading it.
I didn't see it in here.
I just bring it out because that's a unique situation. That as long as it's covered under something here, that's fine.
Wetlands and wildlife.
Well, Okay, municipal measures to avoid and minimize impact to wildlife at the proposed site.
Then number 30 and 31, at least on mine, maybe it's 32 and 33, talk about, you know, U.S. Fish and Wildlife concerns and the bat, avian and bat protection plan. So it's, birds are addressed in general, but not that.
I'm not saying put it in, I just wanted to talk through it a little bit, because that's, we've never seen, I've never seen something like that in a project area before. Where they have, like for the whooping crane ones, we'll say that they've consulted with the Fish and Wildlife Service, they're participating in habitat conservation plan, and then it's addressed. So this one, the Fish and Wildlife Service, somebody's identified there's a threatened, well, no, it's not a threatened
I
species.
I believe
anymore.
The eagle's nest
it's outside
was
the
identified
area,
in
right?
One of the other projects. And then they told us, they found it afterwards, and they told us about it.
And they got, okay.
Can we have David clarify? I'm pretty sure that there was one in this project area, and we talked about it, and the guy said, their environmental person said, the wildlife folks said this is the furthest west from the Missouri River in the, that they found an eagle's nest.
He testified. My recollection of what he said was they found this eagle's nest and this project. They avoided it by, I don't know, say 2 miles or something is what he said. They're 2 miles from.
I don't want to get in that. We don't want to get in the habit of opening up for questions. We should just let you guys sort it out.
In the past, we have. If you
why?
Want to ask the
this protocol, because then that we're not giving others the chance to speak in this work session. This is the way it's set up. If you have a work session, you start talking directly with the company, and there's somebody from the public that's not allowed to participate, they can view that as.
But the work session's open. The public could be here.
They're not. I just that's a legal thing.
Well, we have.
Well, I think it'd be appropriate if I said, you know.
I'll let you ask the question.
If I said to David, my recollection was that you guys located an eagle's nest, and if I'm remembering correctly, it was, I think, 2 miles from where the project ended up being. Is that correct?
And they dropped off.
David?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was making sure that was okay to answer.
Yeah, it is.
If the attorney asks it.
Okay, that is correct. Mr. McCourtney testified that the nearest turbine was over 2 miles away from that identified eagle's nest that was identified after the Bison 3 project was placed in service.
That's the same one you reported to us, right, David?
That's correct, Jerry.
Okay.
So it's 2 miles away, but still within the project site, or it's just...
It's outside the project site.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Let's just move on then.
Okay.
And Julie, I can't give you the best legal one. We might need to have a separate discussion about work session protocol. I just know we've never opened it up because of that. But if mm-hmm. we could, that's something we could talk about later.
Afterwards, let's talk a little bit. I remember something different.
Okay.
So we're on 7. And... that brings us up to the company is going to check out how far away the closest turbine to a road is. And so I've got a yellow highlight there to, mm-hmm. to fill that blank in when we get it.
Okay.
I think you spelled publicly wrong. It's popping up on my screen. Anyway, maybe you fixed it.
Public.
There's no A.
It's just
public.
B-L-I-C-L-Y.
L-Y. There's two references in there, publicly.
I think the spelling check would hit on that.
It did on mine. That's why I noticed it.
Consider this. Should this be a head job?
The closest turbine to the right of way?
To the head job.
I'm going to, when I get this straightened out, I'll probably change the wording a little bit in the sentence, too. In the next couple of paragraphs, I just tried to distinguish between participating and non-participating for distances of the turbine from the residence and noise and shadow flicker.
You know, this is not specifically to this project, but I'm still I have concerns about when we start giving out specific numbers for range for noise. And I don't know if it's worthwhile to get too far down the road here, but okay, if someone wants to approach the highest expected level at this level is 37 dBA, why don't we say the highest expected level is below some standard? Somebody wants to protest the order because it comes back 37.5. I mean, is that worth the discussion? Is that a better way to do it, or is it better to try to put each one? And I'm not thinking so much about this project, but it's, I don't want to box yourself in with noise when it's such a controversial issue and so hard to measure what noise comes from what point.
For me, the word expected, this is what we expect it to be.
Is noise something that we even have jurisdiction to consider?
Yes.
Based on what?
Based on the impacts to the people and residences around the wind farm.
Okay, but what is the standard for noise? There's no standard for noise.
We don't have a standard.
We now have an avoidance area, anything 50 dBs, 100 feet from the house.
Okay, so do we start using that as the norm, that it does not exceed the standard, and then let it be at that? And then that way, in the future, we give ourselves some more room, if you will.
You could, you know, if you put it this way, what I would say is, you know, for some reason something happens where the noise is more, it may come back to an instance where and it's causing a problem somewhere. This could, you know, say, look, it was expected to be 37 or more. We got to do something about it.
So it's better to say expected to be below 37 than expected to be below the norm, below our criteria, whatever that might be.
I think you could do it either way, legally.
Well, yeah, because the 50 is the EPA guideline, right?
Depending, yeah, there's... There's
day
in
art there, too, that it's... I don't know if it's an official guideline or unofficial guideline or what it is, but...
The EPA had a couple of different guidelines depending on whether it's averaged or instantaneous or something like that over the 20. One of them was 46 or 48.6. And
but those are all just recommended guidelines. The rules you said are 50.
I have to read them again.
Did that make it in the rule yet? Did that make it in the rule yet?
Yeah. It's in there now. I could have referenced that rule in here and said that they're within that, but our record has this in it.
Well, could we just add that? That our rule states, I mean, they said they expected it to be these levels. Our rule, and then state our rule?
Well, I don't know that we have to add any more. I just wanted to talk through this a little bit. Maybe for future hearings we have to do a better job of the questions, because I don't want us to get walked into this corner. We have some hearing, we have some number of 37, and then somebody goes out and measures, and it's 37.5. And so they can test the order when it's well below what we consider our standard.
Right. I agree with you.
So we give ourselves more flexibility.
Although, you know, our standard is one thing. And I didn't know that was in the rules even.
Yeah,
but if something is violating a rule that is our standard, I would think we'd be more inclined, and say that's 50. I would think we'd be more inclined to force the issue. Now, if they say, and they document scientific work that shows a reasonable belief that the highest they'd expect at a non-participating person's home is 37, I think that's an important part, because it tells us they're not coming in at 49.9, and you just wonder, geez, is that reasonable? They barely got it. They're a long ways under in DBA measurements, and so actually that number gives me a lot of comfort in this, where if they were only saying, yeah, it should be under 50, I'd have a little more concerns about a couple of these specific turbines.
You know,
but should it be in the order, I guess, is the question. I agree, it's comforting. Do we include it in the order, and what are the ramifications of including a level that's lower than our standard in the order? Are we willing to hold the company to meeting that?
I don't think you are holding them to meeting that. I think that
back
this
to your
is what's
word
expected.
About, that's the key thing. So that I'm fine with the way it is after we talked it through, but I think that's the expected, gives us the leniency, if you will, in the future, that someone can't come back and protest this order if it's 38, because we expected it to be at 37.37. And then we would then apply whatever the rules we have are now if we have a complaint on it.
I mean, we just they modeled it, and this is what they expect to happen. And
okay.
Things don't always work.
I just think noise is going to be a bigger issue for these orders as we do more of them in different types of industry. So. Okay. Looks good, Jer. Thanks.
Okay. We're also, once again, just burying it to 42 inches.
Yeah, can you talk through that again? I must have been thinking about something else when the company discussed that. What was it usually?
48. We had 48 inches we'd been using, and I can't remember where we get the 48 from now. If there's a rule somewhere or something. But somehow we'd been using 48, and they pointed out to us that if they're going to dig 48 inches down, they need to shore up the trenches. It's a safety issue for OSHA. And it makes the whole project a whole lot more expensive, putting plywood in those trenches. And so they want 42, and then they can not shore up the trenches. And we talked about making that our requirement to go 42 inches instead of 48, and just never did it. But that's something has occurred to us.
Is that a rule?
Well, they're still going deeper than pipelines, because pipelines are like at 36 inches. So in previous work sessions, we were...
I think it was in the certification document. It wasn't really a rule.
Yeah, it's not in the rule. When we went over this before, the 48 came from sometime a long time ago, when I think farm equipment was a little different and things like that, and... The National Electric Safety Code requires it to be 36.
Yeah, 3 feet down.
And if they go 48, they need trenches for people in there, you know, with the wire. If they go 42, they don't need trenches, and it cuts down on costs, cuts down on
impact
disturbance area, and things like that. And basically what. I wasn't involved in Bison 1, but it's kind of been consistent, at least with this project, that anyway we've approved the 42 inches. I don't think anybody else has requested us make that change other than Minnesota Power on these, at least not the ones I've been involved in. So that's kind of the history of it.
Yeah.
So the others are doing 48, you think, and doing the whole reinforcement of the trenches?
I don't know what they're doing.
I'm comfortable with the 42. I'm just...
Yeah, we haven't had any inspectors write them up for not shoring up trenches.
Well, I will say, you know, not to get too far along the lines with committing to a decision one way or another on this case, but I'm not very comfortable with 42. I'm still trying to reaffirm with some soil testing professional what the... norm is in Western North Dakota. You know, I mentioned at the hearing what I had heard, but that was, you know, not a sworn testimony or anything, and it was from a whole different area of the state. where they're going 48 inches.
Right.
And if this is putting a big chance of someone getting electrocuted out there, because that soil testing is something that happens. Boy, when the weather's right, people go after it. And it's just so tempting then to not do your one calls. I think just because it saves a company a few bucks on the OSHA requirements to go a little shallower is a little bit risky.
Yeah, and we can't start, in my opinion, the law for one call is the law. You can't start making people put something deeper because we know they're not going to follow the law. It could be soil testers. I mean, it's people have to follow the law.
I think the main thing was plows, and I don't plow, so I don't really know how deep does a plow go these days.
Not that deep.
Soil testers can go down to 6 feet, depending on what they're trying to test. I mean,
you don't have any kind of a problem with farm equipment hitting it at 42 inches.
Well, and if you're a soil tester in a wind farm, you know there's electrical lines all over the place. You better be calling one call.
But to intentionally go less than the norm that we've typically done of 48, because it saves a little bit of money.
I don't know we've typically done 48. The NERC standard is 36.
The norm at Bison has become 42. This is the fourth project that they've done there in that area, and the other three are at 42.
And that is one of the points in my decision-making on this, in that this one kind of fits like fingers into a glove with the other three. And so, you know, perhaps the damage is done anyway. If I ultimately accept 42 on this one, I sure don't mean to determine that I'll accept it on every other one where there's nothing yet in the area mm-hmm. at a shallow level.
And I guess from legal perspective, I don't think accepting a variation on any particular case is necessarily committing to anything. It's all based on the hearing record evidence. So I know everybody may start requesting it, but if the commission's not comfortable with it on any particular case, as long as there's evidence and a reason why, then I don't think it sets a precedent, so to speak.
On these sorts of things, where we're consistently changing our rules, I know I'll get resistance from legal on this, but like on our if this is an example, or on our, you know, always shortening the time period from 1 year to 1 month, the waiting period, I think we need to look carefully at changing those, because it sets up an expectation that we're changing the rules, and then the public sees that we did something exceptional, even though we do it all the time, and then we've got problems because, well, we shouldn't have done it. Well, you know, we need to look at what makes the most sense, and rather than making the exception the rule, make the rule the exception and change it when it needs to be higher or something.
Yeah, I think legal does have to step in here, because this is noticed as a work session on this, and there's actually not a waiver issue on this one, so I don't think we can really have that discussion at
okay,
the work session.
I'm just saying it. We don't have to have that discussion now.
Yeah.
I'm just stating that as something I see more often.
It's if it's not a rule, too, I mean, I don't think it's a rule. It's just a past practice that we've been doing, 48 inches.
Whatever it is.
We should talk about that tomorrow when the three of us are together.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
So,
I've got a list.
Me too.
And I do...
Mr. Fawn says we just lost our feed. Can you stick your head in Scott's office, Pat? We'll hold tight for a second here.
Since we lost our feed, we are just about done.
As long as we're recording, we can still continue.
Yeah, we're not required to have a feed.
No. All right, thanks. As long as we're recording, we can keep going.
So on the next page, then, we also talk about they wanted some modifications for the tree and shrub clearing. We've given those to him in the past, too. And I do have the tree and shrub with me, so let me read what...
Well, the difference in paragraph 2, we don't have the 1-inch requirement. It's all, and in paragraph 3, it usually says 1-inch instead of 3.
The two, it says now they have to be inventoried regardless of size. So that means little itty bitty little sap, little trees would have to be counted. And so they want that clarification that only 1 inch or greater at breast height. And in paragraph 3 right now it says 1 inch or greater at breast height must be inventoried. And they say that our 3-inch diameter at breast height inventoried. So
is that consistent with how we've changed it in others?
We've let them do that in the other two. This isn't exactly forest land out there.
Yeah. That might be an understatement, Jerry.
There was a record they put together of the 3-inch ones they know are going to make it. The little ones, a lot of those don't even make it to maturity, so that was the rationale.
Makes sense.
Paul Bunyan was.
So this order would give those changes from their certification again in this case.
Jerry, I want to go back to the question we were having about the depth, to beat that dead horse a little bit more. What is the... I think it's important to figure out just for us that they're modifying to 48.2 inches, okay, but what 36 inches is the NERC standard. So why couldn't it just say we're built in compliance with a NERC standard? I mean, what are we modifying that says 42? This has to be modified to 42. We're not even sure of that.
What we're modifying there, and this goes before my time, is we usually require 48.
Based on we being the commission, based on
the certification says 48.
Okay.
And the approach has always been, you know, kind of the certification says what it says. If you want a deviation from it, you'll make a special request and present evidence why at the hearing.
The PSC's certification that we put together at some point in time based on some set of facts.
We used to have all of these things wrote out in an order.
I remember that. And then we switched to the certification and took it out of there.
And so this stuff is how it was in the orders. And, you know, I remember it coming up probably 20 years ago, and somehow or other it was determined that it would be 48 inches. I don't think there was any rhyme or reason to 48. It just sounded good at the time. I remember Bruce was on the commission, and he was a farmer, and he thought deeper was better. And the commissioners kind of agreed with that idea, and so it went at 48, and nobody objected.
So, but it's tied back to our certification says 48 inches, not a PHMSA standard for pipelines, not a NERC standard for power lines, but it's just what the PSC has developed over time, and it's...
I think you could say everybody would agree these have to be buried to a certain depth.
Agreed.
Instead of having a bunch of people come in and present testimony on how deep is the appropriate depth, I suspect sometime in the back the commission took a depth that they were sure was safe, set it in there, and then if for a particular project it was okay to modify that, you ask them to request it, and then they present evidence on why it's okay to alter it for this particular project, that you avoid, everybody agrees it has to be a depth, so you avoid people coming in, you know, two or three witnesses saying how deep it should be, and then you just, you know.
It's like a 1,400 feet guideline that developed over time based on nothing but what Commissioner Culk said he would have voted on the first time, and now it's become a guideline.
You know, kind of standard. If somebody came in and said, we think it's okay for this to be 12 inches of depth here, everybody on the commission might be saying, oh, we have a concern with that, but if there's no contrary evidence in the record.
Well, could we make the statement, say, the commission accepts Minnesota's testimony that they'll build this at 42 inches, which is in compliance with NERC standards, and not reference that it has to modify something?
Have the certification attached.
We already have a finding that they're in compliance, that they're building in compliance with National Electric Safety Code.
Okay, so that's your counsel to Commissioner Fedorchak. Take this broader discussion somewhere else, but okay.
Well, I mean, the certification, you know, as it applies to this case, could be discussed. I think if there's changes needed to that, I know staff continually updates the certification based on changes in technology and the environment and what we're seeing in hearings. It does change over time.
It does, and that was a discussion that started about changing it to 42 inches in the certification, but it never happened yet. So, and before we did make that change, we'd make sure that the commission was on board with it.
But to Commissioner Crispin's question about, which I don't give away the point, they don't have to call before you dig, but the soil testing is going deeper now than it's ever gone before. You know, they used to soil test to 2 feet, now they're down to 4 feet, and actually 6 feet sometimes. So there perhaps was a protection at one time just by that extra depth. So you don't feel comfortable that we could change this, just saying it just complies with the NERC standard?
It's not NERC. It's NESC.
NESC, which
is National Electric Safety Code.
Oh, okay.
And if we said that would put it at 3 feet. There is some language in there that says, or to accommodate expected surface usage. So.
But to get away from saying we're wavering all these things, is there a different way to phrase this? That gets to the same point, that
we say that they're complying with the certification document that they signed.
Yeah, these are proposed. How do we say this? The proposed modification. Yeah, we went through that language.
Yeah, what we're doing is they signed the certification
that said 48 inches.
And then, except they'd like these two exceptions, and then we're giving them to them in the order. It was kind of a discussion on whether we should change the certification for modifications or stay with the standard document and address modifications in the order. And it was Pat's decision to stay with the standard documents rather than change them for each individual company when they're
signing. No, agreed, because that's what we started out. We had these orders that were volumes, and a certification cut down the orders by having those things up front. All right, I say leave it as is then. Address it at a different venue.
And that gets us through the order. The ordering paragraphs are standard. I did change Morton and Oliver counties in paragraph 2 to get rid of Morton.
No, that's the one. Is that the one that needs to stay because it was in their application that way or not? Nope. Okay.
Needs to be changed.
Can we jump back, though, to the... Oops.
Yep.
If we can jump back to the conclusions of law.
Sure.
On number six, I mean, I don't know where the line is, but when I hear the level to which Minnesota Power expects to use wind as their source of power, it does cause me some concern. Now, I don't know how much it impacts our decision making, since they're not really our customers. The most of Minnesota Power's customers are not our constituents. But when we say that we're ensuring continuing system reliability and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion, I think those are kind of subjective comments, and I'm sure the company is confident that they are, or they wouldn't be doing this, but I'm not so confident that they are. Is it important that we include that in our conclusions of law?
It is an objective of the Siting Act. It's the language from the statutes. And I think we used it in our issues.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so if you identify these as issues to be decided, you should have a conclusion addressing them, is my thought. But we could get our lawyer to speak.
I agree.
Where is it in the issues?
In the announcement or whatever it should be listed.
In the preliminary statement.
Yeah, right up the notice of rescheduled hearing, number three. Will the proposed minimize adverse effect?
Our objective in citing is to do these things.
And those are taken straight from what the legislature says we need to, from the statute. Here's what we need to determine, right?
And on another aspect, what a company decides to choose for their generation mix is irrelevant to citing this stuff. We aren't even allowed to consider need in our decisions. It's not whether it's needed or anything like that, but it's where it's going to go.
Well, how are we ensuring continued system reliability then?
I think we're looking at the location, where it goes, and the timing, not delaying it, as the factors that we can control here in ensuring reliability. If we regulated them, then in another different proceeding, we could be looking at their mix, saying whether or not they've got too much wind. But it goes back, I think, to that Mandan line case where there was a line through here that the commission said it wasn't needed, and they just didn't give a permit for it, and there was an appeal. And the court told us that it wasn't our job to determine whether or not it was needed.
Well, approving something, denying something because you think it's not needed, you would do that because of costs, right?
Yeah, or in another proceeding, a PC&N proceeding.
Right, but your rationale would be, so you don't put unnecessary costs on the consumers.
Yeah.
My concern here isn't about the costs to them, it's the reliability. Would we, if a company came in and said, we want to build a wind farm, and this is going to be 100% of our power source, and we say, well, what about when the wind doesn't blow? And they say, well, we're just confident it will. Would we say that we're meeting needs of reliability? Because sometimes it won't. And so then I mean, that's the extreme, and they're certainly not, to be clear, wanting to shift to 100% wind. But at some point, where before 100% would we say, this is cause for concern, and we are not ensuring reliability?
Yeah, I think that we have the ability to assure reliability on the utilities that we have that authority over. You're getting into some legal stuff, and I'm not the lawyer, but
it brings out a point, though, that I'd never thought of, I guess, about defining it. Because if we're questioned, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact? We've got a whole record built about bugs and bunnies stuff and noise and all that, but we don't have much of a record built about system reliability. Now, I ask questions about what's their capacity factor, and they said in the 40-some percent. So there's a reliability number that you could – that is reliability. They're dumping it into a larger grid. It's part of the energy equation, so there's some things on there.
I really think that some things you do when you site can affect reliability, where you put it and when you allow it to go in. If the thing needs to be built tomorrow and you're messing around with a site permit, then you've jeopardized system reliability. I think that's what they mean.
And then is that why the discussion about where it's getting dumped into the grid is so important, like we talk about the different substations and how they're going to get it to market, and that shows it's going to aid system reliability?
Yeah, I think if they come and tell you that we need to put it in here because this is where we need the power, and you say, no, we'd rather put it in over there, well, you're not ensuring reliability. You could make a finding that it's fine over here, reliable enough for you, and maybe you'd win on that one.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, that's okay. The Siting Act is the location, okay? So, I mean, if they're going to put a wind farm somewhere where the wind doesn't blow, for instance, that's not going to ensure any further reliability providing power to the system. When we evaluate the site, you know, part of what they're putting in their application is, look, the wind average wind speed in this area at this height is 27 something miles per hour. Our turbines start at 6.7 and kick out at 29 or something, or max out at 29. I mean, I think that for purposes of siting criteria, the ensuring reliability is putting in a place where the power source is generated and can be provided to, can provide power, so you're not putting a wind farm somewhere where the wind doesn't blow. It's not like this wind farm is the backbone upon which the entire system is built, so it doesn't necessarily ensure reliability in that respect. But for siting, it's the location. I mean, that's really the focus of what you deal with in siting. So, you know, I guess from this case, you know, with the company, because they're a Minnesota company, but you know, even the coal goes, I guess, to Minnesota, but, you know, you've got, by 2025, I guess they've got to have 25% of their power from, you know, clean sources, so to speak, and I guess what their application, I think they would say is, look, this ensures reliability because we have more clean power, it produces more power, it's in an area that produces the resource that creates the power. So I think that's generally what that sentence means when you look at it in the scope of a siting issue. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and I don't think that we have authority to say whether, like, Basin Electric is adequately reliable.
Well, we don't regulate them.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So
we don't regulate Minnesota Power either.
Right.
What about the...
But would, go ahead, would... If I can just finish this thought, would in the siting case, since we talk about ensuring reliability, if this were a wind farm being built by or with stated intentions of serving MDU or NSP or Otter Tail, would this be... what I'm hearing is this would be the place to discuss it.
Then I think that where it's going to go and what the siting of it is still irrelevant. You could tell MDU not to buy power from that wind farm. But I don't think you could tell that wind farm that there's don't build it because it's not reliable. If it's not, you could tell MDU not to build it because it's not reliable, but you couldn't tell Global Winds Harvest not to build it because it's not reliable. You can only tell them where they're going to put it.
Okay, well, I'm not sure I agree, but okay. I do get the difference here with Minnesota Power anyway.
So.
And it does beg a question of how, I mean, if it is truly just siting.
Why is it?
You know, how relevant is that criteria?
But, see, I would take it to the other level, though. The company testified that they're going to dump in 835,000 megawatt hours per year. I mean, that is a huge thing that's going to help out reliability, make sure the energy needs are met and fulfilled. So I think it is in there. I mean, now, we could have the argument that it's not base load, but this would be no different than a gas peaking plant. But the fact is that they testify they're going to dump in 835,000 megawatt hours per year into an electric grid, which can then be dispersed into a larger network, back to my MISO discussion, that when this wind is blowing, somewhere, somebody inside either the Minnesota Power Network or the MISO market is going to benefit from this power. It's not going to meet all the needs, but it is a huge thrust into the grid of energy, which will ensure system reliability because somewhere it's part of this picture.
Although did not Mr. Gartner say that this would replace thermally produced energy and purchased power? And I guess I interpret or assume that purchased power means coal.
It does for Minnesota Power, but it doesn't in the grid because that power is still going
somewhere.
This is Minn Kota's Milton R. Young Station, and it's going to continue to run. That's why they're building the line to Grand Forks. That power will be used in the Red River Valley now instead of the Duluth area.
Let's go the other way. Let's say we're trying to find a way to reject this project based on that statement. We've not asked the questions out there.
On the 834,000?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think you can because they've provided testimony of all the energy they're going to dump in there. But maybe it's something we could clarify a little bit more for in the future for other.
MISO had to do interconnection studies to make sure the grid can take that power.
So there, that could be something that's not in the record right now.
No.
But I did ask about interconnection. And so some of those things like that are questions that we could have asked that maybe tighten this up a little bit for that statement.
If we felt that the interconnection wasn't sufficient enough and the grid wasn't able to take it, maybe we could say you can't put it in there.
But the fact that the studies were done, the interconnections have been approved, it means that somebody with the expertise has studied this and says it does help in reliability. Otherwise, they wouldn't have let it drop into the network.
We're getting into an area there where we have state and federal jurisdictional questions, and I don't know what the answer would be.
Okay. All right, Commissioner, any other thoughts on that?
No.
Not for now. Okay. All right. Commissioner Fedorchak, anything that you're missing here?
Nope.
Okay, so Jerry, you'll get the larger from page 3. If it, make sure it's not much. If that thing gets to be too big, you need to let us know right away because that might affect some of my decisions. As long as the road setbacks are fine, I think we'll be okay.
I think our larger should probably be coming out, but I just want to make sure.
Okay.
I think on that subject, though, in future cases, even staying just off of the right-of-way, you know, we talked a little bit about this on some pipeline reroutes last winter. We made sure we contacted the political subdivisions to see if there was a road change in mind or something. Sometimes, you know, you stay 33 feet off the center of a section line and you're off the right-of-way, but if the county's intending to upgrade that road at some point, you've just cost them the ability to do that. And I don't see anything like that here. I'm not concerned about it as long as Commissioner Kalk's concerns that it's off the current rights of way. But in the future, maybe that's something we ought to try to remember to have clarified with the political subs on these cases.
We put it in the rules when we made the rules.
That's one of the criteria, the existing plans of local, state, and county governments is one of the selection or policy criteria. I can't remember which one exactly, but I think it's the first one on, I think it's the first one on policy or policy criteria.
It's in, I think it's the selection.
Might be selection.
Okay, as long as it's addressed.
Okay.
But, the way the rule reads right now is the 1.1 times rotor diameter from the edge of the road right away. Or if it's just a little township road or something that doesn't have a ditch and a right away associated with it, from the center of the road line and plus 75 feet.
Okay, so Jerry, you'll make these changes and get another draft order out, and then I'm not anticipating another work session before the meeting, but if one of my colleagues wants a work session after they get the next draft, you just have to let Jerry know, and we'll see what we can do.
So I think my next draft is going to be a final distribution. Is that what everybody's thinking here?
Yeah, go with that, Jerry, and then if one of the commissioners...
changes to it.
Yep, deal with it then, and if... someone decides not to vote for it, that'll be they could issue a counter motion or they could have the changes that they wanted to it. So
okay.
I think to get to that point where we move forward. Yeah. So, all right, Mr. Armstrong, anything?
Nope.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Nope. Anything?
Commissioner Crispin?
Nothing else, thank you.
All right, thank you all. We'll close the work session on case number PU 13-127. Thank you.
Oh, I lost my mic. You know, I...